everybody, and welcome to another episode of I Could Talk Kayfabe, because I could talk kayfabe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm qualified to do so. I'm Joe.
I'm Sean.
And while we're eating potato chips, so bear with us here. We're going to talk about Pro Wrestling Illustrated from August of 88,
mm-hmm.
and it's got The Torch Has Passed, Macho Madness, The Torch Has Passed, and it's got a cover of Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage being interviewed by NBC.
How do you know it's NBC?
The NBC logo's on.
Oh, okay. I couldn't really tell because the cover's a little bit
messed up. A little damaged. We'll find a better cover for the artwork for the iTunes. But yeah, it's Hogan and Savage.
It looks like it's right after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Like at the same event because Hogan's wearing his...
Hogan's wearing the Hulkamania bandana and Savage is still wearing the Macho Man when they're not wearing Mega Power stuff yet. So yeah, it's got to be fresh after WrestleMania 4.
And Savage has got that belt, the winged belt. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so that's basically it. They're right off the bat. They're like, hey, WrestleMania.
And they have a very tiny photo of Luger and Barry Windham in the top corner.
Well, that's how a lot of these used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Luger and Windham electrify the NWA.
Yeah.
And always tell you what the pinup was, so full-color pinup of Al Perez.
Al Perez, and it's a great pinup. If you look on my Instagram, Sutpants Joe, I have the photo of the pinup on my Instagram.
Yeah.
So you can check it out on my Instagram.
Al Perez doesn't warrant a pinup, though.
No, he doesn't, which is why I put it on my Instagram, because I was like, that the Latin heartthrob is what they bill him as, and it was just great.
I loved Al Perez back in the day.
I was like, Al Perez, that's awesome, and I posted it. And it got a lot of likes on Instagram. So yeah.
From Al Perez.
Probably all from Al Perez and his family. Yeah. Bunch of, or just
Lou Perez, his wrestling brother.
Or just random Perezes. So like, oh, Al Perez, see? And they click the heart.
Rosie Perez.
Yeah.
What other Perez? Miguel Perez. Mm-hmm. And his back hair liked it too.
Oh, yeah. Miguel Perez's back hair would be a good like Twitter handle.
It'd just be like, I'm warm. I think I need. It's really weird. I keep hitting the mat. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Just the sentient back here. Let's talk about. Let's talk about the big stories here.
Okay.
Let's get into those.
Get the
first.
Table of contents.
Table of contents, but you know we'll get to the cover stories and the big mm-hmm. stories because it's a PWI.
Yeah.
It's the first one we did, and basically the format of these.
Is this the first Pro Wrestling Illustrated we've done?
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that. The granddaddy of them all, and mm-hmm. it took us this long to get to one.
Yeah,
I mean, we've done other after mags, but
this we haven't done Inside Wrestling yet, though.
No, but this is the after mag. This is Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the creme de la creme of after mags
mm-hmm.
and of kayfabe mags.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
so our first one that we're doing.
I used to love looking because you would have like the subscription page mm-hmm. in the like when right early on in the book, and it would have all the other photos of the books, and like, you know, this is pre-internet, so you couldn't just look these things up
mm-hmm.
and always be like, oh, what's it say on there? You know, I want to know what it's talking about. You know, what are they talking about here? Like, I always remember this one here with Hulk Hogan and the picture of him, you know, of when he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had the two pictures of him as a kid for some reason, you know, and then they had the, yeah, and then they had the 87 year in review, which I had. That's a good one. That's a long one, book too. That's like a lot of wrestling information.
A lot of stuff went down.
That's a lot of kayfabe. Yeah. A lot of kayfabe in there. But yeah, let's. So we'll get to some of these articles in a second here. Let's just jump right into it. To some of these main articles. I think that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Well. This is, of course, it's the way that they set these up. I hate
the way with Pro Wrestling Illustrated is okay. So it'll start an article, and then like if you want to continue reading, it, you have to flip to the back of the book because they'll go on to like the next article on the next page.
Bullshit.
Yeah, it's very it's counterintuitive to do it that way, but that's the way they did it, and that's the way we read them. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So bam, bam, the lights go out. Kerry Von Erich's darkest hour.
Well, yeah,
you know, it would get a lot worse for him, but
This is definitely. This is not his darkest hour.
And so basically we're talking about Kerry Von Erich losing the world class title to Iceman Parsons.
Yeah, and if you look at like the photo on the immediate left, you've just got like this Michael Hayes, and he's just covered in blood, and he's got this like evil look on his face, and he's holding Kerry Von Erich's head like in his hands.
Is he bleeding on him? I think
he's bleeding on Kerry Von Erich. I don't think Von Erich's actually bleeding. I think the blood's just dripping from Michael Hayes onto Kerry Von Erich's
face. I kind of want to take a picture of this and share it, but also I feel it's kind of tasteless.
It's very tasteless.
Because he's like... It's disgusting.
I am going to take a picture of it.
Oh, you should.
I'll put it on my Instagram at Sweatpants Joe. You can totally see that. Yeah, by the time you read this, it'll probably be down on my feed, so you're going to have to go through my feed to see it. But yeah, it'll be up there, and it's awesome.
Because wrestling photos in black and white and blood are just some of the best, but they're also they really remind you of how barbaric sometimes it could be. The process, you know, the practice of blading was, you know, because some wrestlers just, that's all they did was blade.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do to make it easier for you to search it. I'm going to hashtag it I Can Talk Kayfabe. So if you look for the I Can Talk Kayfabe hashtag,
yeah,
or
hashtag ICTK.
Nah, yeah. Should I do? I'll do both.
Yeah, do both.
And then that way you could see it. You could just cut through the bullshit and see it right away.
So as Joe's doing that, I'll explain here. So basically, Carrie and Iceman are fighting, and they're in the match. And Michael Hayes is Carrie's second, which is weird because, you know, the vaunted feud between the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. But I think it's just Michael and Terry are in the area. But, well, actually, all the buddies in there too, but they're not together. And it's just something where you get like this whole thing where they try to make this big, like, oh my God, it's a big mystery of who did this. Because, you know, at some point, the lights go out during this match. Somebody runs in and beats Kerry Von Erich with a sock filled with quarters.
No.
It knocks him out, and then Iceman pins him to win the championship. And, you know, at some point, and also somebody knocks out Michael Hayes, which is, you know, why he's bloody, you know, because he gets his ass kicked. And they're trying to be like, well, who did it? And they go through like all this different, like, you know, how the situation is weird and why it's able to stand, which I don't get it. Because if the lights go out during a match and they come back on and one of the guys is knocked out, clearly somebody got knocked. Clearly some, I don't know, some sort of chicanery is afoot and the match should just be thrown out. Logically,
but this is kayfabe.
This is kayfabe, so it's allowed to stand, and then they go through this whole thing where they're like, oh well, you know, we asked a bunch of these different, you know, they interview, you know, Parsons, and he's like, what do I look like, an electrician? You know, it's like, I don't know anything about this stuff. What are you talking about?
Here's the thing about this article too. I never realized Iceman King Parsons had like a heel run with the title.
He was back,
but yeah. By
this was the dying
days. I was going to say this is like the end of WCCW, but I like, when I think of Iceman King Parsons, I think of the baby face coming to the ring with "We Are Family" and mm-hmm. just handshaking the fans and just a good time. I didn't realize he had a heel run. I gotta go back and watch late WCCW, I guess.
Yeah, that's another one that they own, the network owns the rights to. But they just don't put them up.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see all of these late ones because I want to see, you know, you got, you know, Buddy Roberts was, it was hit Buddy and like the Samoan SWAT team, you know, and they had the thing going, and Buddy was using his wall to hit people with. And like, I think it was Michael Hayes and maybe Parsons, they were the Blackbirds, or somebody was like the Blackbirds. They weren't the Freebirds, they were the Blackbirds. Mm-hmm. So. But yeah, they're also like, well, maybe it was Lance Von Erich. Now, I don't know if Lance Von Erich has been kicked out by this time because, you know, they revealed him as not a Von Erich.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, was it Lance Von Erich? And they don't offer any like proof or any evidence as to why it could be Lance Von Erich. They're just like, maybe it was Lance Von Erich. Maybe it was the proof that he got kicked out. Maybe it was him. But yeah, and we get like these photos, you know, of this happening. We actually get a photo of like what supposedly what happened in the dark, and you could see.
Oh, that's what that's supposed to be. Yeah. Because I was gonna say that photo is really dark, but yeah, that's what. And you see the sock full of quarters. Wow, look at that.
Yeah, just beating them with quarters.
Yeah,
that guy from Bubba Rogers versus John Tenta.
Yeah,
remember that? They had that on a pole.
And Iceman King Parsons is the new champ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. And it's, yeah.
So it's funny because I remember there's a website, wrestlingclassics.com. They have a forum. And the discussion was, because Ron Simmons, when he won the WCW title, was billed as like the first African-American world heavyweight champion. And somebody in Wrestling Classics was like making a case for Iceman King Parsons to be recognized as the first world heavyweight champion.
I don't think you can
and
do
I,
that.
Like, no, that was like a regional promotion.
At like, that time, it was a regional promotion.
I think it, like in its entirety, it was a regional promotion. But at that time, especially, it was, wasn't even like a major promotion anymore. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, press conference, Bruno Sammartino.
Bruno Sammartino. It's funny because, like, so this is an interview with Bruno Sammartino. We kind of skipped over one. This is the second interview with Bruno Sammartino in this magazine.
Well, I'm going to give a hot take.
Yeah.
I don't care about Bruno.
I don't care what he has to say in 1988. No, I don't either.
He's one of those things where it's like, I can hear him do an interview, and maybe now, or maybe I've heard him like on Observer before, and it's very, you know, it's a good listen, but
yeah,
88 is just, you know, he's just, and I understand why he doesn't care for it much, but at the same time, he's like, hey, it's not like it used to be. It's not like, you know, two guys in trunks beating each other,
yeah,
you know,
for an hour.
How come it's not wrestlers like that anymore? I don't like what Vince is doing. Blah. And he also screwed over my son. It's like, yeah, well, your son sucks.
Yeah.
David Sarantino was really bad.
Yeah. And that's basically the gist of the interview. And what's funny is, so in the other interview they have, I'll just talk about it really brief because I actually read the other one. He's just like, oh, Hulk Hogan, he's not a wrestler. He's just out there to get a reaction. The fans used to scream for me just to run to the ring. Hulk Hogan has to cup his hand by his ears to get the people to cheer for him. And he'd come to the same arena three times in a year. The second time, it wouldn't sell out. And I was just like, okay.
Whatever.
It's just sour grapes with Bruno Sammartino.
Whatever you... I respect... the fact that he did, you know, everything that he did. I mean, who cares what I think?
Yeah.
Honestly, who gives a shit if I think of whether or not he deserves respect or not? But it's just one of those things where every time I hear him talk, and I'm just like, God damn it, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. Just can I just watch something else?
He's kind of breaking kayfabe.
He is.
In those interviews. That's not
100% he is.
Yeah, so it's like...
Well, here's the funny thing is at the end of the interview, he's like... They're like, so what are you doing now? And he's like, hang on, I gotta find it here.
Yeah, we gotta scroll all the way to the back of the.
Yeah, hang on. So, what are you up to? Oh, Jesus, this is so long. God damn it. So what are you up to now? And he's like, well, I'm working for, I'm involved with Phone Programs Incorporated, a telephone based wrestling information service. I'll do some TV commercials for them and some commentary, some reviews, and what have you.
So basically, he's like shilling a 900 number.
Without giving it a 900.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, whatever, Bruno. I, good for you. You know, thank you. But 1988 Bruno can just be quiet.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 4, the torch, Macho Madness, the torch has passed.
Yeah. And what's funny about this, okay, prior to this article, I'm going to go back to the other articles that we skipped just to touch them a little briefly, but everyone buried WrestleMania 4 in this magazine as like being boring and just unwatchable. And,
it kind of is.
And they're kind of right. And their biggest gripe, and I got to agree with them, because Ted DiBiase and Randy Savage, probably two of the best workers in the company at the time.
Yes.
And... the whole match, like, they didn't really get to have a match because you had Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan at ringside, and that was the whole story of the match.
Yeah.
And so they could have had a great match, and they didn't.
A valid gripe.
Yeah. And, yeah, looking back on it now, as a kid, when this was going on, I loved it because, you know, I was a kid. I didn't know any better. But, like, yeah, looking back, if I was an adult, I would have been pissed.
Well, just like Hogan in general. He's just a big fucking dummy.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you're just like, you think about how Hogan was, especially when you think about the whole deal with him and Savage, you know, because Savage basically, you know, he turned on him.
Yeah.
You know, but he turned on him in more ways that was kind of justified.
Yeah.
You know, because he was just being, you know, just being a shitty friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, yeah, he had every right to do that. But we get, like, you know, just kind of the rundown of how Savage gets to the, you know, wins the match and stuff. And, really nothing that you that if you're sorry listen to this podcast you don't already know.
Yeah, go back and watch WrestleMania 4 on WWE.
Go back and watch WrestleMania 4.
Actually, according to this magazine, don't watch WrestleMania 4. Another thing they talked about was Strikeforce Wrestling Demolition, and Demolition got a bigger pop than Strikeforce, which was true, even though Demolition was the heels. So yeah, go back and watch WrestleMania 4 just for a few matches. You don't want to watch Hercules versus the Ultimate Warrior, that's for sure.
Or about Briefcake versus Honky?
No, I wouldn't want to watch that either.
What about the Battle Royal? I'll watch the Battle Royal.
Watch the end of the Battle Royal.
I'll watch the Battle Royal overall. I like Battle Royals.
That's a good ending.
It is a good ending.
Yeah.
Let's talk about...
Yeah, Al Perez.
Yeah, so now we're at the centerfold. Al Perez. And we get his little bio here. Now, this is the thing about Al Perez. Is Al Perez at this point has probably only been wrestling... so it says he debuted in 1982. So he's been wrestling at 6 years at this point.
Yeah.
Yet it feels like there's like barely anything to talk about.
There's really nothing to talk about. Like if you flip to the other side of the close up after the where they talk about his greatest match was just a match against Kerry Von Erich.
Well, this is the one where he won the title.
Yeah.
He didn't win the title actually.
Yeah.
Did he win the he won the world class title by because Kevin Von Erich
mm-hmm.
got quote unquote hurt by Brian Adias with the Oriental Tool. So they stripped him of the title and he won by forfeit. And then he wrestled Kerry Von Erich in a cage.
On Christmas Day,
because that's how they used to do it back
in 1987.
Yeah.
He was wrestling Kerry Von Erich. I got my Atari that day.
Nice.
That was a win for me, I think.
I probably got some sort of G.I. Joe. I probably got like...
That was the Christmas I got my Atari, so I think I win.
Nice.
Yeah.
Favorite maneuver of Al Perez is spinning toe hold.
Yeah.
Which, it's not even like a finisher for him. They didn't even talk about it. It was like, well, he uses it to set up a pinfall.
He use like the razor's edge? Like what would become the razor's edge?
He used to use... Okay, so if I remember correctly, he used to use either... It was called the Alleycopter.
Okay.
And I remember it either being like the spinning razor's edge.
Okay.
Like Oz used mm-hmm. in his debut. Or it was a spinning vertical suplex. Like he would just turn with the guy and then drop him.
Oh.
And that's what it was. Because he'd actually, believe it or not, Al Perez got a shot in the WWF.
Yeah,
very little bit in like 1989. He didn't last very long.
No, I do remember that. And I remember he was hyped up in WWF Magazine, too, is coming.
Oh, you got a spot in the magazine?
Yeah, like just a little corner blurb.
Good for him. Scoring.
Yeah.
You got that Tom McGee love.
Yeah. But like you look at his matches, like his toughest opponent, Chris Adams.
Yeah.
Most hated opponent, Kevin Von Erich. So it's like he never left Dallas.
He pretty much got all the stuff in Dallas. Yeah. He started as a jobber in... in world class, or not world class, in Mid-South.
Yeah.
And then he ended up like doing some other stuff, ended up going to world class, found his way there, and then he ended up in NWA. And that's just because at this point he's in NWA wrestling for the heavyweight, the US title and stuff like that. And he had that because he was in, because he was in the Tower of Doom at this point, and this year, I think.
Oh.
He was at Bash 88, he was in the Tower of Doom for some reason. Dylan sends another horseman to the chair as Luger and Wyndham electrify the NWA. I see what you did there. PWI, who wrote this? Craig Peters?
Yeah.
Good job. So basically...
This is kind of the end of the horseman for a little while, too.
It's the end of the horseman until Barry turns on Lex.
Yeah.
Basically it.
Well, I mean, this is like right before they jumped to WWF, like when Dylan, Arn, Tully, and Wyndham all left to go to WWF.
Yeah.
So this is kind of towards the end of the original, I shouldn't say original Horsemen, but like the Horsemen run before they got back together in 93.
Yeah. Yeah, they had another... good couple of months left
in
88 here. So, yeah. And this is basically just talking about how they won the titles. Barry and Lex won the titles from the Horsemen. And, you know, JJ, the whole thing with the chair is that there was a mishap with the chair. He threw in a chair, and I think, like, Arn hit it or somebody else hit it. I think it was somebody else hit it. Probably Arn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they lost the titles.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that's...
sad day for you.
What?
Sad day for you.
For me?
For Arn.
Oh. It's like me. It's like I wasn't wrestling. I always did this media review. This used to be like every other month. I used to do these.
Mm-hmm.
They used to do this. It was like just would be like a thing about the TV programs and stuff like that. It was just a bunch of... It was probably more of like the statistical prose. So I never really read these. Unless if it had something interesting in it, which it doesn't. It talks about world class being on TV. I'm like, whatever. It's almost done. Ultraviolence in Memphis, banned Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah.
And this is actually my favorite part of the book.
Yeah, of course. It shows them at the television studio, and he's got a fireball.
He's throwing fire all over the place here. I love it.
Yeah.
And I miss fire.
He's like Ken and Ryu in Street Fighter. He's just throwing fireballs. Yeah.
He is. He's throwing, well, it's great because it's just like he's throwing, I mean.
And he's throwing in a Jerry Jarrett.
He's throwing one at Jerry Jarrett, and then he throws another one at Randy Hales.
Yeah.
And his fireballs, like, always look great.
Yeah.
Like, they look like they're actually, like, he's actually throwing a fireball. Like, it's just flash paper, but, I mean, he's really good at throwing fire. And one of my favorite things about him, because that's kind of like one of the things that Eddie Gilbert was always known to do, is throw fire. Because I remember this one issue of he was being interviewed in a Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and they're talking about how he's he's being interviewed at an airport by a bunch of the editors, and he's eating a sandwich, and he's like, "Ah, this sandwich is colder than Bonnie Blackstone," and then he sets it on fire, and it starts burning like papers around him, and then just people stop it. He's doing this at an airport in 1991, which you could probably get away with in 1991. Yeah. I guess. You know, I mean, nah, try that today, and you'll be in jail forever.
Yeah,
because you won't be like, "Ah, I'm Eddie Gilbert. Ah, setting fire to the sandwich." Like, he sets it fire to the sandwich, which I wonder if he ate the sandwich afterward.
He was trying to warm it up. I have to imagine he would. Why would he go through all the trouble of throwing the fire?
Well, maybe he set the whole thing on fire. And he just like, he's like, it's kind of.
Well,
like,
then I'm sure he salvaged the sandwich.
I hope so.
Yeah,
it's a waste of a sandwich.
I agree.
But yeah, Eddie Gilbert throwing fire. He's slamming Jerry Lawler on a car. This is even before. I thought this was around the time when he hit Jerry Lawler with a car, but that's still not for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're like, ban Eddie Gilbert. We got to ban him.
He was pretty violent.
Well, okay, here's the thing. This is actually pretty great. The first paragraph. When the Greek demigod Prometheus raced up Mount Olympus and stole fire from the gods to give to man, his sentence was sentence for the crime was to be strapped to a rock. An eagle would come down, devour his liver, after which his liver would grow back, and the monstrous bird would continue eating for all eternity.
Oh, right? That's quite a sentence.
Right. Eddie Gilbert's punishment for his recent series of fiery offenses should be no less severe.
Oh, wow.
So they're saying that he should have his one of his organs eternally eaten for setting fire to throwing flash paper. So they are very much on the side of no fire. They hate they anytime somebody throws fire in these magazines, they're like, "Oh my god, he threw fire." You know, I'm like, whatever. Okay. I want to see that just happen once in a WrestleMania, like out of nowhere, like just some guy, like Bray Wyatt could throw fire.
Yeah,
I want to see Bray Wyatt throw
Undertaker.
Fire.
Didn't that one time he would botch the fire attempt, so he just lit it, like you could see him clearly lighting it.
Yeah, yeah. I think the last instances of fire in WWF and WCW have gone very poorly.
Yeah,
because I think the other one was Hogan and Warrior at Halloween Havoc '98, where it just looked really bad.
Sergeant Slaughter's fireball against Hogan after WrestleMania 7 was really good.
That was a good one.
But here's the thing with that fireball. So that fireball, like, you saw it after the event, so who knows how many takes it took to get a good fireball. Like, they could have done it multiple times. Because it was obvious, it was done backstage.
It was.
And it was done so well. Like, I remember as a kid, I legit thought Hulk Hogan was burned.
I kind of want to go back and see that now, because I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember it being...
So it was definitely, I'm sure they took their time with it and did it perfectly.
Heel Slaughter was awesome.
Yeah, he really was.
You know, I know he wasn't the greatest wrestler, but he was still awesome.
That 1991 Heel Slaughter, because he was heel like early.
Really upset me when as 1991 Sean, when he beat Warrior.
Yeah. Oh, I was legit pissed. I remember throwing
a tantrum.
That really upset me. Yeah.
Because, you know, Macho Man getting run down, hitting him with a scepter. I mean, hitting him with a scepter and breaking it over his head.
Yeah. And instead, it took 18 stitches to stitch him back up.
Yeah. I kind of want to watch that again.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go back and watch those again, because that was prime time for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Eddie Gilbert getting his liver eaten. And so that's it for the main stories. Let's take a break.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back and we'll wrap up this book.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed, so.
Oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
And we are back here on I Could Talk Kayfabe. And so, yeah, now we're going to go back and read like the undercard of this magazine, I guess.
The jabronis.
Yeah.
The jabroni articles. Well, we got the letters. And I kind of like this one where they always have like the one where they get the most letters for.
Yeah.
I feel like. And because in the previous issue, is the end near for Hulk Hogan? From 1988.
From 1988, Stamp. You know, I could see like why they would think that, because Hulk Hogan did slow down a little bit. That's why Savage was the champ. But it was only to slow down, as we know now, to film No Holds Barred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, he did his thing. And, I mean, Hogan, you know, I mean, he probably was his most active, like, early on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, from 84 to 87.
Yeah.
Was probably, like, the one where you could... You know, say that, but now I can see why they would put that in there. But you got like the yin and yang here of people being like, "How dare you?" and somebody being like, "You did a good job. This is great journalism." I'm like, "All right, hey, what else we got here?" I don't care about the letters because somebody ripping on. Actually, I'm actually watching a lot of this on NWA right now with the dawn of the Varsity Club.
Oh yeah,
and it's just so weird because Kevin Sullivan comes out and he's the games master or whatever the fuck he is, and he's got like the demolition outfit, but on his face, and he wears that and a robe. And Mike Rotundo is the TV champ, and so they'll wrestle matches. And then like they're feuding with like all these like undercard guys. So they're feuding with like Jimmy Garvin and Ricky Santana, and I think Shane Douglas is in there too. And they're like they're winning all their matches by like, you know, all those matches by like Steiner will distract a referee, or Sullivan will distract a referee, and Steiner will run in and give Rotundo a coat hanger, and he'll choke the guy out with a coat hanger while pinning him.
Wow.
He'll do that thing where he chokes it, which you apparently can't see a coat hanger being used.
Well, they're very discreet about it.
But yeah, but yeah, it's pretty wild, and I'm kind of like, man, when are they could their comeuppance? And they do eventually. I mean, they do implode. You know, the Varsity Club went on for a long time.
Yeah,
actually.
It was quite a run.
It was quite a run for them. It was around for at least 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, 88, 89.
Then they tried to bring them back in late WCW, losing the Monday Night Wars.
Well, that was the thing. They even brought back Mike Rotundo.
Yeah.
And they just were like, yeah, you're in the Varsity Club now.
Yeah.
It was the same three of them.
Yeah.
Because like, Sullivan was there. Sullivan, I don't remember Sullivan. Yeah, because Sullivan was pretty much retired by then.
Yeah, yeah.
And they also had Kimono Wanalea as the valet.
Yeah, Sullivan retired after his feud with Benoit, and he wasn't really on TV. But then he came back for the Varsity Club.
I'll have to go back. I want to get through the Nitro. There's all this stuff I want to like jump ahead to, but I don't really want to jump ahead to.
Yeah.
Because I just want to watch it as it happens.
I'm watching 86 right now because we've done a lot of magazines from 1986. So I thought I'm going to go back and watch 1986 on the network. So I'm watching everything from 1986 right now. So
good call.
Yeah.
We got the
Midnight Rider here.
Well, we got the Ringside, which is basically like their wrap up of all the news.
And so it's Midnight Rider.
Dusty Rhodes got suspended for being stupid. And Midnight Rider shows up, and everybody's like, "We can't prove that it's him." I'm like, "Yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
It's Dusty Rhodes. Come on, come on."
And they talked about how the Midnight Rider conveniently showed up like 5 years prior when Dusty Rhodes got suspended.
He did. The whole thing in Florida too.
Yeah, he lost in Florida. It was a loser leaves Florida match to Kevin Sullivan, and the Midnight Rider showed up for 60
Midnight Rider
days.
Showed up and he won. He beat Flair for the title in a match, and then they had to make him turn it around because he could turn it back because he was Dusty Rhodes in the mask, obviously. So yeah, but it's pretty. It's pretty wild. Let's see here. We got. Ooh, this sounds like could have been fun. David Sammartino signed with has signed with Wrestling Stars International.
Oh.
Never heard of them. And will wrestle the Iron Sheik in a series of upcoming matches.
Oh, good for him.
Sammartino will be managed by Dominic DiNucci, and while Johnny Valiant will be in the Sheik's corner. That is a Northeastern old school wrestling fan's wet dream.
Yeah.
That is the wettest dream you can have in that case. So we got.
Glad to see Johnny Valiant was getting work in 1988.
Yeah, I think he was already out of the WWE by this point.
He was out of by then.
And then he putzed around AWA. And
all,
then
all his guys were now managed by Jimmy Hart. Yeah. With the exception of Dino Bravo, who was probably managed by Frenchie Martin at this time.
Right.
He eventually would join Jimmy Hart's stable. Yeah.
Yeah. I always don't remember him as a prominent wrestler, a prominent manager. He was never really one of my I know he was always around back in the early the mid 80s, but I don't remember him being any good. You know, like he would wrestle occasional matches. I know he was the reason why the Dream Team won the tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was behind that, but I don't remember him really. I just remember him being, when he would do commentary, and he's always like just one of those big loud mouths.
Yeah, because back then, you had. Hogan was pretty much working with Heenan's family. Heenan was occupying the main event stuff.
Well, Hogan used to wrestle, Brutus back then. He wrestled Brutus. And, because I only remember him really having, Brutus, but, Valentine.
But when I think of Hogan feuds, I think of, King Kong Bundy, who was managed by Heenan.
Yeah.
And then you had, Andre the Giant, who was managed by Heenan. And then Big Boss Man was managed by Slick. So, yeah. Hogan and Jimmy Hart people didn't really mix it up until 91 when he was feuding with Earthquake.
Earthquake and Dino Bravo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. No, Hogan never mixed it up with Johnny V back in the day. I don't think it was really a lot of that. That's probably why it doesn't ring as much. Danny Spivey going to World Wrestling Council.
And this World Wrestling Council. Yeah, but Danny Spivey is looking like a really big baby face there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, he's going away. He's going to fight something.
The modified Tommy Rich haircut.
I do like this thing here. It says, did everybody catch the comment made by Jesse Ventura after Savage won the WWF title? I'm so pumped up, I might come out of retirement.
Oh.
And they're like, oh, my God, was he serious? I'm like... No, he's not.
He never did.
Like Jesse Ventura doesn't have to come back.
No,
it's okay. We're fine. we don't need him. Also, this is kind of gets buried in the lead here, but Rick Rude and Jake Roberts start feuding because they start kissing. Try to kiss Cheryl Roberts.
Yeah, they had a match at WrestleMania 4.
Well, this is wait. I don't understand how this works then because they're talking like this is just starting.
Yeah,
but the match. This angle was already had to have taken place.
Yeah, WrestleMania.
WrestleMania 4. Yeah. They're talking about WrestleMania 4 in this thing.
Yeah. They're all over the board.
Mm.
The feud continued on after it, didn't it?
It did. It went on through.
Because they had the big match at the Survivor Series where they were on opposing teams.
Right, and they had they interfered in each other's matches, in WrestleMania and SummerSlam 88.
Yeah.
Because, definitely. I think. Valentine, or no, Jake beat Hercules, and, yeah, that's right.
Rest in peace, Hercules.
R.I.P. Hercules, and Rick Rude beat Junkyard Dog.
Oh, rest in peace.
Or both of those guys.
Both those guys, yeah.
Or maybe he DQ'd him because Dino Jake interferes, I think. But also, I think this is an understated debut here. There's Eddie Gilbert, Jerry Lawler fighting, and apparently... Mm-hmm. There's a $25,000 bounty to take out Jerry Lawler, and Kurt Hennig apparently took it up for free. And then in another match, somebody jumps in an executioner mask, and apparently underneath that hood was Scotty the Body.
Oh, wow.
So are we talking Raven here?
Yeah.
But that's weird because this is 88. I don't remember him. I know he wrestled in Memphis, but I don't remember him. I don't know. Was he there back then? I don't know. I guess so.
I guess he's just starting
and that high up, too.
Yeah, he had to start off somewhere.
Well, he started. He was in Memphis. Not Memphis, but he was in, probably all over the place. He probably wrestled, knowing Raven, he wrestled in Portland. He was there for, that was a big thing for him. But yeah, no, it's just, yeah, just, it's interesting.
Next time you have to troubleshoot with Raven on his podcast, ask him about it.
I'll ask him.
Just be like, hey, listen, when you took off the mask as the executioner and you debuted, just talk to him about it.
Talk to him about it. He'll probably be like, I don't want to talk to you, dummy.
He'll be like, put somebody else on the phone.
I want a new producer. What'd you call it? So yeah, from the desk of Stu Sachs, talking about how apparently it's about this Von Erich controversy. Kevin's, they're like, because they're basically saying, oh, people think that the Von Erichs have the officials in their pocket.
Oh.
And he's like, yeah, right. Somebody took the lights out and beat me with socks filled with change. I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's, I like that it shows some vulnerability in the Von Erichs, that they would do that for so long. Just always make them seem like super, like superhuman. I don't know.
They were superhuman.
Superhuman until
when your father owns the promotion, you are superhuman.
Even if you're Mike Von Erich and you weigh 2 pounds.
Yeah.
Here's one of your favorites, WrestleMania Boar.
Yeah,
Boar.
Yeah, I already talked about it a little bit, but yeah.
In Focus with Craig Peters calls WrestleMania Boar.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, and yeah, like I said before, like you go back, there's really no match that's worth rewatching at WrestleMania 4. If you've never seen WrestleMania 4, maybe you want to watch it just to like watch them all, but it's definitely one of the worst WrestleManias.
Thinking back about it, yeah, you're completely right.
Yeah.
There's nothing back there that's really like must see.
Yeah. Like WrestleMania 3 had Savage Steamboat.
And they point that out here. Yeah. It's like, you would have like had WrestleMania 3, you have Savage Steamboat, and you got, for posterity's sake, or for, remembrance, you got Hogan and Andre.
Yeah. And as not special as WrestleMania 5 was, looking back at WrestleMania 5 as well, it's way better than WrestleMania 4.
It is, yeah. Well, you got some good angles in that one.
Yeah, WrestleMania 5 was more. Who was the Intercontinental? Oh, yeah, that was Rick Rude. It was Rude Warrior. Yeah.
And you also had the breakup of Strikeforce. You had some debuts there. Yeah. You had Kurt Hennig, being featured. And
yeah, you can watch the Rockers get squashed by the Twin Towers.
One of my favorite things about that WrestleMania 5 is when they just bring out Jimmy Snuka. Like, they introduced Dino Bravo for his match.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, by the way, Jimmy Snuka. And he's like, hello.
Yeah, he just came out and waved, and that's it. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, now, what the fuck? Here's whoever he wrestled.
Was it Ron Garvin?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Ron Garvin, yeah. Which, Ron Garvin lost that match, and that always bummed me out.
Yeah.
Because I always wanted for some reason, I like Ronnie Garvin. I always liked it when he, I just like him. I like that he was just this square-headed dude that punched people in the face. And he didn't really fit the WWF, but it was fun to see him there. I don't know. I liked it. I liked him there, and he's always weird. It was just weird, but that's how I kind of roll. I kind of roll towards the things that you don't know everybody likes. Yeah. So
he had a yellow towel, I remember.
He had the yellow towel, and he had the he had the stomp, and that's how he beat guys. Yeah. Stomped on their hands and their face.
And then he lost a retirement match to Greg Valentine.
Was it Greg Valentine? No, here's the thing. So he also retired by wrestler Greg Valentine to become the
referee.
The referee.
Yeah.
He came back as a wrestler, and I remember him losing a Loser Leaves Town match to Rick Martel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I watched it on Primetime Wrestling, and I remember this vividly because Rick Martel held the tights. And that's how he won. And that was it for Ronnie Garvin and WWF.
Well, what a way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was it for him pretty much in general.
He went to Puerto Rico,
yeah,
and then I think he just kind of, and he was also in Smoky Mountain in the early days.
Oh yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah,
yeah, and then that pretty much was it for him because he was already like 100 years old at that point.
Yeah,
he's one of those guys. Like Ronnie Garvin's one of those guys who you watched him wrestle in like the mid-80s, and you're like, oh man, yeah, this guy is whatever, and you don't realize he's been wrestling forever. Like he wrestled in the late 60s.
He's a former NWA champ.
He is, one of the worst NWA champs.
But. Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't hold it very long.
Well, he held it just so he can have some Flair, somebody to beat.
Yeah.
Flair, somebody to beat at Starcade. Here's your other.
That's the other interview with Bruno Sammartino.
No holds barred with David Rosenbaum.
Yeah, where he buries Hulk Hogan and.
Fuck the Hulk Hogan.
That's pretty much the whole article. It's like he's talking about the 70s and how he sold out Madison Square Garden and Boston Gardens. Here's the thing. He toured like four cities, basically New York, Philly, Boston. Well, I'm not even going to count Pittsburgh. Like, New York, Philly, Boston. Okay, we'll just say those three cities. And, like, that was it. Like, he didn't go anywhere else. Like, he didn't go to like, Charlotte. He didn't go to Miami.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been pointed out in, like, other, you know, when you read other wrestling wrestling books or whatever, history about that. Like, it's always kind of pointed out that he never had as big of a draw elsewhere other than just the Northeast.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, everybody that saw him in the Northeast really remembers him.
Yeah.
And looks at him fondly, and he's, you know, he was very successful. But, I can care less.
Yeah.
But
it was before my time.
It was before, maybe, yes. Maybe if I was a teenager in, like, the early 80s, you know, and I was watching this, you know, stuff, then maybe I had more fondness of it, but it's not for me.
Yeah.
I'm Hulk Hogan. That's how it was.
That's me too. Hulk Hogan.
Eddie Ellender's off the top rope.
Yeah.
You know, just a bunch of bullshit from him. I don't know if I want to get into this because it's not really anything. There's not really anything funny in here.
Well, he's just burying WrestleMania 4 as well.
Yeah, basically.
He's saying April Fool's Day passed, and the WWF didn't release something about WrestleMania 4.
Donna McNelly from Niagara Falls, Canada.
Oh.
Is that one of your people?
No, I've never heard of her.
Well, she's on the other side of the bridge.
Yeah.
We got our ratings.
So we got our top tens. Before we go into these top tens, I want to flip the page, because this issue has top 10 managers.
Right. So every so often in the ratings analysis, they'll do like a special comp or something. And they'll do, and this one, they're doing the managers.
And number one, J.J. Dillon. And I think that deserves to be there.
This is actually a very good, maybe not so much, but we'll go through it. J.J. Dillon, number one. Jimmy Hart, number two. Honky's the
Intercontinental IC
champ at the time. So
yeah,
makes sense. Paul Ellering, Bobby Heenan. Which apparently, they don't even mention Andre here. They just mentioned Islanders, Rick Rude, and Harley Race.
Well, Andre was doing the thing with Ted DiBiase at that time, so Heenan wasn't really around with him.
That's true.
Yeah.
No Herc either. Jim Cornette, number five. Sir Oliver Humperdinck, number six. That's kind of high, because all he did
was with Bam Bam Bam.
And Paul Orndorff, and he never...
Yeah, they never did much with...
I don't remember anything about him, Humperdinck, doing anything of note in WWF.
No, other than manage Bam Bam Bigelow.
Not even, like, really. I don't even remember him cutting
He was just there.
Remember him cutting, like, promos or anything.
No,
like
he was just kind of there. Like, because, like, Bam Bam was coming in and all the managers were trying to get him. He's like, nah, I got my own. And he brought in Oliver Humperdinck.
And I remember I distinctly remember the time when Orndorff brought him on, because it was the whole thing where Heenan was like, oh, you're coming back to me. And he's like, no, my manager is Sir Oliver Humperdinck. And Humperdinck shows up. He's like, hey, good night. And he's leave. And then it's like, okay, well. And he just wore, like, the jackets. That's all I remember him wearing. Just, he had, like, really shiny jacket, like Bobby Heenan jackets that Bobby Heenan wouldn't wear.
Yeah.
So that's good. World Class, it has Gary Hart at number seven.
Yeah.
And it's Al Perez of charge.
Yeah.
Paul Jones, number eight. Paulie Dangerously at the time. Is number nine, and he's barely managing just Abdul the Butcher and Randy Rose. That's not a, I mean, it's, that's a very disparate stable. And
number 10, Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Managing Randy Savage. But I think that's a little low for the list, because she's managing the goddamn world champion.
You know, yeah, you're right.
So, like, I think that PWI is holding the women down. I think it's a sexist ranking.
But I also think, too, that the way their argument would be is, like, well, she hasn't really gotten Macho Man the kind of matches. Because the way that they, like, talk about it in the ratings, because we'll see here in the ratings, is, so, top 10, and you have, you know, your usual suspects. You have Flair, number one. Savage, number two. Sting's, number three. For a contender. Kurt Hennig, number four. Lil Luger. And you got all those guys. Then you got Hogan at number eight. And they make kind of a big deal about this in the ratings, because apparently he was also number eight in a previous thing. And, well, actually, I like this. There's a letter that comes from somebody. From Earl Brown of Middletown, New York. Inspires the debate amongst the top 10 ratings in general, and two champions in particular. Two wrestlers, my wife and I, my wife, have been keeping track of in the past 4 months are Honky Tonk Man and Ric Flair. And they basically are like, well, they wrestle these matches and they don't win clean victories. But you know, he should be higher up in the ratings because he wins matches, you know, cleanly.
Yeah.
And they're like, but he also has only wrestled Virgil and Harley Race, who wasn't in the tournament, so they're not, you know, and he wrestled Andre in that, you know, that doubles qualification.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, he's not really fighting top tier talent. So that's our justification. It's like, I'm not going to argue with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to argue with them. Yeah, tag teams.
What's interesting about tag teams, the number one tag team, the Road Warriors, they are the All Japan Tag Team Champions, and they rank them as number one. Above Barry Windham and Lex Luger, who were the NWA champs, and Demolition, who was the WWF champs. So.
Yeah, but the Road Warriors up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were number one.
They're dominant, though.
That's they were. I'm not arguing that.
They don't deserve it.
Yeah.
Let's see. NWA rating, well, we'll see, most popular, most hated, real quick. Basically, no discretions here,
mm-hmm.
or nothing weird here. Everybody here belongs here, I think.
Yeah.
I think Eddie Gilbert would be higher, considering he's
throwing fireballs,
but he did go up from two spots.
Yeah, but like the thing with Eddie Gilbert was just he was in Memphis.
Mm.
He wasn't in Jim Crockett. He wasn't in WWF. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a good rating for him at number five to be that hated. But yeah,
well, and then you have your regional ratings. NWA looks about right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this UWF has already been absolved into the company, and so you have, you know, Shane Douglas number 10. Shane Douglas getting some action here.
Al Perez is a number 7.
Al Perez, he just debuted. He's fresh into the NWA.
And he's already passed Steve Williams and Jim Garvin.
Yeah,
yeah.
WWF looks good. AWA, you have the Grappler. Grappler doing a run,
mm-hmm.
here in AWA. He's getting number 10.
Jeff Jarrett in that list as well,
AWA was pretty much kind of like Memphis.
Yeah, because you have Lawler in at number 3. But I'm just noting that Jeff Jarrett, like, he's on the list. Like, Jeff Jarrett, kind of like probably early on in his
showing up in the
magazines. So.
Nah, he was on before. Like, yeah. I'd say he's been around for at least 2 years at this point. World Class, you got you know, your usual suspects here.
Yeah, Von Erich. Yeah, Hayes, Gordy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stampede, Owen Hart is the North American champ here.
Yeah, Chris Benoit, number 1.
I'm trying to think here. Who don't I know here? I'm not as very familiar with everything in your issues here with.
I couldn't tell you who the Singhs were.
Well, I know Gama Singh. Makan Singh is Norman.
Oh, okay.
He's Friar Ferguson.
Okay,
he's
Mike Shaw. Right, yeah.
Gama Singh, I don't know who. I know he's been. He's well there. He's there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And Hasif Khan is actually, that's a new name I'm not familiar mm-hmm. with. And then CWA got Max Payne as the champion.
Wow.
Is that Painkiller Max Payne?
I don't know.
I think it is. Is that Man Mountain Rock? But yeah, you got your
Mike Graham.
Mike Graham's in there. Mike Graham doing something other than Florida.
Yeah,
how about that? Continental, you got your usual suspects.
Mongolian Stomper coming in at number 1. Lord Humongous number 2.
Yeah, AKA Sid.
Yeah, and you got Tom Pritchard number 3.
Yeah. Tom Pritchard looking young.
Yeah.
I'm laughing at that. Actually, Scott Hall. Scott Hall in Continental.
Yeah.
Sometimes you always try to wonder, it's like, what happened to Scott Hall after Florida and all that stuff? AWA. It's like, well, he pussed around here. Here he is here. And then finally, they have the rotating spot.
Yeah.
This is like the rotating one. They put WWA, which is like Indianapolis and like Chicago kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Mike George, champion. Masa Chono,
number 2. Look at that.
I didn't know Chono wrestled over there. I knew he wrestled in Continental early on.
My guess is Masa Chono did like one appearance, and they're like, oh, he's Masa Chono.
Well, so they got him to get him into the States. And,
yeah,
Masahiro Chono. And then Lowell. I actually want to know who Lord Molotar is.
Yeah.
I wonder what that guy's gimmick was.
Oh, yeah, Curtis Hughes coming in at number 10.
Curtis Hughes, yeah. Doing based out of the, yeah, he was getting his start then, so.
Yeah.
So that's it for the ratings. And I'm just go ahead and jump. Is there anything else? I don't think there's anything else other than just.
Not much, really.
I wanted to talk about the Inquirer.
Yeah.
Because there's some good things in here. I also, real quick, I do love these arena report.
Yeah, I always loved reading those as a kid.
Because I love reading, I love seeing, because it's not just like WWF and WCW or NWA, it's like it's all this other stuff.
I used to send Buffalo Championship Wrestling results, and they were always printed in the arena reports.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you have this is fun to read, you know, and you can always kind of, it doesn't tell you what exactly it is, like what promotion it is, but you can kind of guess just by looking at the guys. You have one here, which is actually, this is an indie one in Brentwood, New York.
Oh.
The Iranian Sheik.
Oh, that guy.
Taking on Pistol Pete Williams.
Oh.
Is that Petey Williams? Also, Carmine Albano, the son of Captain Lou Albano. I didn't know he had a kid that wrestled. Apparently, this was it, though.
Yeah.
He defeated Giant David.
Oh.
Also, Lou Fabiano defeated Bull Brody. Moondog Spike beats the Wild One. Tom Brandy, spelled with a Y.
Oh.
Beats Billy the Kid, Carmine Albano. Pulling double duty.
Yeah, he beat Cactus Jack.
And beating Cactus Jack, Larry Winters, and Kahlua, a.k.a. King Kahlua.
Interesting.
Yeah, how about that? And then we have, ooh, there's actually a mat at the forum, NWA at the forum. Check this out.
The forum out here?
In the Inglewood.
Oh, yeah, Inglewood, California. We had, look at that, Flair.
We had Flair beating Sting for the, you know, in a championship match. Road Warriors against beating the Powers of Pain in a lumberjack match. Windham and Luger beating Arn and Tully by disqualification. Garvin and Rotunda going to a draw. Larry Zbysko beating Ron Garvin. Rick Steiner being Pistol Pete. I'm assuming Pistol Pete Sanchez?
I don't know.
Oh.
Mondo Guerrero.
And Mondo Guerrero and Tony Rocco, who I am not familiar with, going to a 10-minute draw.
That would have been an interesting card to attend.
Yeah, that would have been fun at the forum, nonetheless. So here's my favorite things here. I was reading this real quick. So you have, like, the Inquirer. So they would have, like, just...
You have to flip the magazine for this one.
Flip it vertically, you know, sideways. And they would have just like a random like stories in here about like stories they couldn't really fit in, but they wanted to maybe talk about a little bit at length. And then, you know, but they didn't want to spend a whole big page article about it, but they also didn't want to stick it in like just a random thing. And maybe stuff that's actually kind of breaking, I feel like it's maybe like happening.
Yeah, this is pretty big news here. The Rock and Roll Express signing with the AWA.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, they pussed around there before he went back to NWA.
Big news for the AWA.
Oh, I know. AWA getting a shot.
They must have been using some of that ESPN money to sign those guys.
Currently holds the World Organization Wrestling. Oh, I've actually watched that. Have you heard that? That's one that, if you could find it, it's... Who was I looking up? I was looking up... There was somebody I was watching that I was like trying to find matches for. Shit, I can't remember. It was, I'm trying to think. Indie wrestling. Oh, it was Bob Sweetin.
Wow.
R.I.P. Bob Sweetin, who was also a piece of shit. He is.
Was he a Buck Zumoff level?
Yeah. He was actually. Yeah, that's the thing. He kind of he did some. That's why I'm calling him a piece of shit. But he apparently he just passed away, and he had a few matches in this really like looks like the low rent. Florida wrestling.
Do a quick Google search. I really don't know who this guy is. So
you never heard of Bob Sweetin, Mr. Piledriver?
No.
He was a big star back in like the early 80s of the Mid South. Yeah, there's he also looks like you could best be described as Donna's dad from That 70s Show. He looked like I forgot what the actor's name is.
Oh yeah, he does.
Yeah, but yeah,
he's better known as Bruiser Bob Sweetin or Mr. Piledriver.
Mr. Piledriver, yeah.
Yeah, he just died last month.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things where like he died and everybody just didn't realize he died, and they're like, oh, I guess he's dead.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he apparently... So anyway, so that's... He used to wrestle in this federation. I didn't realize the Rock and Roll Express were part of that.
In WWE's Legends of Wrestling in 2009, Jim Ross stated he didn't like Sweetin and didn't want to be around him, describing him as a miserable human being.
Yeah, nobody liked him. Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Jim Duggan refers to Sweetin as a bully and a real piece of garbage.
yeah, I know. Which apparently Duggan wrote a book. Did he?
I'm sure everyone's written a book.
And then we have some other notes here. Apparently Hulk Hogan going after the Intercontinental titles because he had a few matches with the Honky Tonk Man. Magnum TA, I don't know who the Midnight Rider is.
I think you're lying to us, Magnum TA.
I know. Owen and Brett, a New Heart Foundation?
What?
No, man.
Owen was the Stampede champ, and Brett was already, like, former WWF tag champ by this. But Bill Apter is reporting this, so...
Yeah, Bill Apter's full of hearsay.
Well, Owen did eventually leave to become the Blue Blazer not too much later, so...
Yeah, no, he probably has some tryouts at this point. He's already on his way there.
Yeah.
And then they have... So then you go through... around the globe, you have a little blurbs on the side here. And the one that stands out is Uganda, Africa. I'm just going to read this.
Is it about Kamala?
It is.
Oh.
Well, who else would it be about? It's about Rip Rogers.
Yeah.
Researchers here recently discovered that Kamala, who has terrorized several wrestling federations, has an identical twin brother living in Uganda who is even more dangerous than Kamala. Okay. Apparently, Kimchi, Kamala's handler, wanted to bring both of them over, said research head Robinson Evans. Okay. But Kamala's brother was so fearsome he was afraid to do it. Whose brother or the researcher? Or Kimchi? No. I just pray that some madman doesn't try to capture him and turn him into a wrestler. The results would be horrifying. I agree.
Are they saying that Kamala was captured against his will?
He was.
And trained against, like, his will to become a wrestler?
He was captured from the swamps of Tennessee.
Oh.
From his truck driving job to become an African giant. Don't you know?
Yeah.
Oh. There was eventually Kamala, too.
Yeah.
It was
a few. If you look on YouTube, there was... a short-lived, like, it was like a one-show promotion called the AWF. Not to be confused with the Tito Santana promotion, but Kamala teamed up.
Oh, it's not the same one?
No.
Oh, I thought you were talking about. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Kamala 2 teamed up with Kamala, and there's a tag match with their partners.
What if Kamala 2 and Kamala 1 formed to become Kamala Prime? Like Station and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
Oh.
You never see that?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, just imagine the Kamala's becoming Giant Kamala.
That's not a thing I care to imagine.
No.
Because that would be...
It would also be terrifying.
The destruction would be real, that's for sure.
We'd still be fighting it today. He'd just be wreaking havoc. It'd be like the 100-year battle against Kamala Prime. Well... That's it for I Could Talk Kayfabe.
Anything on the back? Oh, just advertisements.
Yeah, we're just talking advertisements here. So that's it for I Could Talk Kayfabe. Pro Wrestling Illustrated, August
1988.
Yeah.
With the Mega Powers.
Macho Not Madness.
Quite yet the Mega Powers, but yeah.
I got to take a picture of this so I can know which one it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's this is the sweet spot of wrestling magazines, you know. And the thing is, too, is like I had a lot of 87 PWIs, but 88 I never had.
Yeah.
I never really got to 88.
88 was kind of one of those years where, like, I was a kid, I was really into wrestling, but, like, around WrestleMania 4, like, around this time, for whatever reason, I just, like, wasn't really watching it that much.
Yeah.
So it's always good to go back and look at this year.
I was probably watching it. Like, I was always watching the pay-per-views, but yeah. I was probably more interested in, like, G.I. Joe's and shit.
Yeah, like 87, like WrestleMania 3, definitely into.
Yeah.
89, WrestleMania 5, I was definitely into. But for some reason that year, I mean, I remember watching the Mega Powers. I remember, I don't know, I just don't think I was that into it at that time.
I remember watching SummerSlam, and I remember I remember getting all the pay-per-views. I remember that's a thing where we get the pay-per-views and we just watch them. And that's how you did it.
I could say, honestly, I don't think I watched SummerSlam that year. Yeah.
I definitely did, because I remember the skirt. I remember Warrior coming out. I remember all that stuff. It's good times. So that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Angry Hero Sean.
And you can find me on the same at Sweatpants Joe. And don't forget to look up the hashtag I Could Talk Kayfabe or ICTK. And you can see that photo of Michael Hayes bloodying Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah,
it's on there. It's getting likes as we speak from my current followers.
Oh, is it really?
But well, you can get on there and look at it as well.
I'll have to like it.
And then, rate us 5 stars on iTunes and tell your friends all about it.
Please do. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.